Hey Beeps, it's me, Christine, and I want to share with you a game-changing product that has improved my sleep and daily health. So let's dive in. You all know through my journey, I have struggled with sleep, being afraid of it, not getting quality sleep, and not being able to regulate my temperature throughout the night. I definitely learned the hard way, but sleep matters big time. It's when your muscles repair, your brain detoxes, and your body can work on cellular renewal. We just can't afford to miss out on an adequate amount of high-quality sleep, which is kind of hard when you have a rare disease. There's not much that I control in this real life, but one of the easiest and most effective ways to get better sleep every single night is through temperature regulation. Studies actually prove cooler temperatures lead to a deeper, more restful sleep, and that insomniacs actually lack this natural drop in core body temperature, which is what keeps them up at night. Personally, I run hot. This means that even if my room is super cold, I wake up in a pool of sweat, uncomfortable, changing my clothes several times throughout the night. It's frustrating for obvious reasons, and this is why I was so relieved to discover this transformative product from Chili. The Cube from Chili Sleep is a system that fits right over the top of your mattress and uses water to control the temperature of your bed, which helps lower your internal temperature and triggers deeper, relaxing sleep. Since water has 30 times more thermal conductivity than air, these systems are a lot more effective than just cranking up the AC. I mean, I keep my house at 65, so it has to be true. Ever since I started using the Cube system, I've noticed I fall asleep a lot faster, sleep deeper, and wake up feeling fully rested. Now, my wife is not a polar bear like me and likes to sleep a little bit warmer. So I love that we can each have our own temperatures on either side of the bed. Chili products can range between 55 and 115 degrees. Right now, Chili is offering my audience a really great deal. When you go to chilisleep.com/findyourrare20, you get 20% off the Cube All Sleep Systems with Find Your Rare 20. Sleep is something we could all use more of, and we can all take small steps towards getting better sleep to improve our life in big ways. I hope you'll check out the Chili Sleep System and see why I love their product so much. Hey, peeps. Welcome back to the Because We're Strong podcast. This week, we are getting real and raw with Charles Michels, a.k.a. Chet. Chet is an author, husband, father, advocate, chronic illness warrior, and an educator. I'm personally so excited to have him on the show. Without further ado, I'm your host, Christine, and let's dive in.
This is the Because We're Strong podcast, where we sit down every week to get your stories and insight on how to navigate this rare life. You can expect everything real and raw in the hopes that your story, along with ours, helps another person who is dealing with a similar rare struggle. So grab your favorite drink, a comfy blanket, and buckle in, because rare disease isn't for the faint of heart.
Welcome, Chet. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so Chet, I can't wait to dig into, you know, your rare journey. Could you tell our listeners, like, how you entered this rare world?
Well, it started for me fairly young as a teenager. I just finished a starring role on a basketball team of my ninth grade year. If you've seen me, you know that's a joke. And but I enjoyed sports.
You're so funny.
I joked that I was destined for the NBA, not really, but I enjoyed sports and I had a good time. But I started having pain in my hip, and within a couple of weeks, I couldn't walk. And so we went to doctors and, you know, sought answers, and he came back and said, you have rheumatoid arthritis and your hip is destroyed and you will probably need your hip replaced in the next 5 years.
And you're a freshman. You said freshman.
Yeah. Freshman. I was 15 years old when I got that news.
And then you just got a hip pain. I can so relate to this, by the way, Charles, because what I remember is running marathons and having a knee pain and then my life changing. So that like hit me really hard. But at 15, I couldn't process it at 27. How at 15 do you process that?
You know, it's one of those kind of surreal moments. You know, when you have a doctor looking at you saying you're probably going to be in a wheelchair when you're 40, which, by the way, I'm 46 and I'm not in a wheelchair yet. But when, and they're filling you full of medicine and you're using a cane and you're using crutches to get around, it's just, it's hard to process. It's hard to understand. I can remember, you know, fluctuating from being angry and joking and, you know, trying to still live a normal life with feeling like you possibly, there's no possible way to do it.
What about your family and friends? Like, how hard was it to like relate to them as they kind of went on a different journey? And then your family, I mean, with anything like this, right, is kind of, you know, uprooted.
Yeah, it was, it changed a lot of things. You know, that moment, you know, even for college, we're looking at vocational rehabilitation scholarships and things like that, that I can qualify for. You know, I was very blessed and lucky to have some very close friends that I'd known since elementary. And I'm still friends with these men today. But it kind of walked with me through it. They accepted me for who I was, and we made the best of it. And, you know, through the entire journey, early on, yeah, my parents were very understanding and very caring, but they pushed me and they didn't let me become a victim. They didn't let me give up. And in fact, my dad every day would remind me that God had a special plan and that my attitude was everything and that that would make the difference in how I chose to walk this journey.
I love that. Like, I love the, you know, that whole sense, like, because I do believe, right? Like, all of a sudden my life made so much more sense after getting sick, like why things happened and all those things. But something that's also difficult though is like knowing and agreeing with that, but also being in a chair in which like, I'm not saying that's not true by having a bad day. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think I'm a victim by having a bad day. And that's hard, right? Like, how do you explain that to others?
Yeah, I think for me, it was the idea that bad days are okay. You know, we have this messed up idea that we're always supposed to be the happy warrior. That we're always supposed to
rejoice.
but we're this idea that we're always supposed to rejoice and we're always supposed to be happy. But you know, even as a person of faith, you know, I'm reminded that there are times to weep. There are times to be sad. There are times that you're going to have a bad day and that's okay. It doesn't mean I've given up. It just means today sucks and there's, and it's rough and that's okay for me to have. I just need to be careful, hopefully not live there.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And also, you know, I think we live in a very toxic culture in which we do this comparing or like, I have to be grateful because someone has it worse. And it's, in my opinion, it's really just not like that. Like, you know, my therapist said to me when I was struggling with this was that you don't have to be thankful for the cards you were given, because somebody was given different ones. Like that, and neither one minimizes those struggles. And that's always been something that sticks with me. And I think that's I've been able to.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Actually, I think it's been able how I've been able to relate to so many different people, you know, despite not having the same conditions, not even rare conditions. I consider everything rare. Everyone's path is rare to me. Yeah.
That's a good perspective because everyone's experience is rare. Everyone's experience is unique. I mean, there are a lot of similarities and a lot of feelings that we all feel when we're walking through this. But to say that my brand of suffering isn't as bad or as worse than yours is minimizing one of us. And the reality is, it's hard no matter what you're walking through. On different levels.
Even if it's just Ben and Jerry's, like there's times when like Ben and Jerry's not having my flavor ice cream, like, and I'm not saying like no, it's not earth shattering, but like some days that is what it like. You know what I mean? And like, who the heck am I to judge? Like that you're upset about whatever you're upset about your journey. You know? I think that's one thing. But anyway, I could talk to you.
But that's true. But that's true because often those are those moments, they're the straws that break the camel's back. You know, I have no control over the physical illness I have, but I have control over these other areas. And so when those areas don't work out, often my frustration with what I'm battling is coming out of that too. And so rarely is it the Ben and Jerry's or the lack of Dr. Pepper for me. It is all the stuff that is piled up to that point.
Like you said, the straw that broke the camel's back. And we talked about that a little like before we started recording, but everyone on the show knows I can get so sidetracked. So I'm going to really quickly move it right back, because now you're 15, right? You progress, you grow, you learn to live with this, you know, I mean, at that time, rheumatoid arthritis was actually considered a rare disease. I mean, up until 10 years ago, it was. So you figure it out, right? Like you figure it out. And then as life would have it, tragedy, and I say tragedy in a light way. I think of it as like just lightning, but you know, or a gut punch happens again. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, for me, it's been a series of gut punches.
Okay.
You know, after 15, when I was 17, they had to put me on such strong medicine to get the arthritis under control that it literally ate a hole in my stomach. I had a perforated ulcer, and I was rushed to emergency surgery. And if I hadn't had it within 24 hours, I would have died. And so here I am as a 17-year-old laying in a hospital, first major surgery. 2 years later, at 19, I have my first hip replacement. At 22, my arthritis resurges again, and I have to have knee surgery. At 34, I have my second hip replacement. At 39, I have my third hip replacement. And
you know when something is just too unreal to be true, or it's so unreal that it is true? I just want to be very clear. That's how I feel.
I feel like this is a TV show. No one would believe it. Because in between that, you know, I get diagnosed with osteopenia because of all the medicine I'm on. It's made my bones brittle. You know, I deal with kidney stones, high blood pressure, skin cancer, and all this time.
Oh, throw a little skin cancer. Just for the record, we're not. I love how casual. Just throw a little skin cancer in there. Mind you, folks, I did not know about these. He saved the, you know, the best for you guys, I guess, version of this, because on the form, he did not elaborate. He goes from 15 to 44. So,
and so yeah, it was just kind of a series of. At some point, you look and go, "This is ridiculous. I when does it stop?" And you know, all through this, we had started to notice some more health struggles. You know, I was having trouble with my speech. I was having trouble with balance. My whole body was shaking. I would have trouble moving, and I would just go from doctor to doctor to doctor being told everything looks fine. It must be your arthritis, or it must be this. There's nothing wrong with you. Even you're too young to have what I was diagnosed with. It took 4 years.
Little ageism never hurt.
Oh, yeah. You know, in fact, this is kind of a funny story now. It wasn't funny at the time. When I was getting my second hip replacement, they made me go to a joint replacement class. And I'm sitting around.
I'm sorry.
I know it sounds as awful. Like, no, it sounds as awful as it is. You know, I'm thinking, seriously, folks. And so I get there, and I'm sitting around the table, and the lady looks at the table, and she says, "Now we only need patients, not their families, sitting around the table." And she looks straight at me, and I just keep sitting there. And she makes the announcement again, and so I'm sitting here going, "All right, this is going to be interesting." Well, there's about 20 of us in the room, and I am everybody's junior by about 20 years. And she says, how many of you have ever had a joint or your hip replaced before? And there was a little old lady who was about 80 years old in a wheelchair, and me were the only two that raised our hand. And which was really, really made you feel good. And she stops and says, "Now, I don't mean you've had a family member or know someone that's had a joint replaced. You've actually had your joint replaced." Yes, I'm not kidding.
Can we talk about what it's like? This is the reason I'm laughing is like, because it's not only insulting as a patient, but like it's insulting as to your intelligence. Like,
yes.
I heard the question, and I want to know why you think at like, you know, this age, I would want to go ahead and like join this support group. Like,
yes. And so I keep my hand up. And she looks at me and goes, I'm not kidding. She says, oh, you must not understand. You must be mistaken, but let's move on. And I'm just sitting there. I turn around and look at my wife, who is fuming at this point. But I'm just
sure she's like ready to get up and brawl.
I'm just like, I don't even know what to say to this. So we get done, and this lady happens to be the one who's my intake nurse. And she opens up my folder. She goes, oh, you have had your hip replaced before. And he goes, she just starts apologizing, like, ma'am, it's okay. You're forgiven. We move on. But
move on from me, please?
Yeah, just stop this. Yeah. But it just accentuated how different, how out of step I was with everybody else. And so, you know, I actually had doctors, when they would look at my scans and tell me nothing was wrong, they would just tell me, oh, you're too young for this. You're too young for this. And so after we had gone to my second...
How about the mental health part? Like, what about anyone ever, like, tell you that, you know, you're just, like, mentally losing it
No, I thought I was going crazy. And so the rheumatologist I'd had since I was 15, I went to him and I said, Doc, I said, you know, I'm not a wimp. I said, you know what I've been through? Something's not right. Please help me. And so he sent me to a neurologist. And the first thing the neurologist said was, have you thought about maybe you're just depressed? And I didn't know what to say at that point. Because inside I wanted to scream, of course I'm depressed. I have been to doctor after doctor. You can't tell me what's wrong. I'm absolutely depressed because I can't do anything that I normally do. But that's not it. There's something else besides that.
But can we talk about this? Jed, I want to talk about this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't agree with you more. But I don't know about you, but for me, I became so resistant to addressing the mental health aspect of this because of how many times people were blaming the mental health. Like, I was afraid to say to a doctor, of course, I'm depressed because I didn't want to be blown off again.
Yeah.
And so, like, it led to me not seeking help until I had a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. Like, and, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy when that's the narrative, right? That, like, you can't even express. I mean, I remember being at doctors and literally saying, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, as a therapist, I know, like, the red flags. Not one doctor ever even did a suicide screen on me. But yet they're sitting there telling me that it's all in my head.
And that's the ugly little monster in the corner that nobody wants to talk about. And and even medically, it's something that is dismissed or seen as not a real issue. And it is, I would say 75% of my battle some days.
I have a question for you. I don't know about you, but I went through this phase where I'm like, look, if I am having a psychotic break or I'm having a schizophrenic break, please check. If you really think that, check me into a place, because it's better than living. I'd rather deal with that and, like, figure out my life than it is to live this unknown thing. Like, and I did. I after a CAT scan, turned to my wife and my mom and I said, if I am crazy, please put me into a hospital. Like, I want whatever help is going to help me at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's scary.
I remember sitting there thinking, I'm losing my mind. I don't know what else to do. And so, you know, we went the route of course, when I went to the therapist, she looked at me and she said, how do you get up every morning? Do you get out of bed? I said, yeah. She said, how? I said, I have to. I've got a family. I said, I don't have a choice.
Wasn't given another choice.
I've had, you know, since I was 15, I've had to learn to push through. So I pushed through. And, you know, thankfully, even though this doctor had started there, he didn't stop there. And he tried a bunch of medicine and it wasn't working. And so he said, here, I'm going to give you this pill. It's not going to work. So don't even get your hopes up, but it's going to rule something out for me. And when he gave it to me, within 3 days, it was like someone had flipped a switch. And I started looking at it, and the medicine treated almost exclusively Parkinson's disease. And so here I am, a 44-year-old man.
And after I looked everything at him,
after everything.
I want to be very clear. I know we got sidetracked on a few different issues, but I want to be very clear. There was pretty much something every, like, 3 years yes. at a minimum. So I just yes. want to be clear that we're ending here at Parkinson's. We actually haven't had anyone with Parkinson's on the show. If you don't mind, can you explain, you know, what Parkinson's is and what that means for you?
Well, you know, for it's called the snowflake disease because it is so different for every individual. And, you know, most people think it's just shaking. But it is so much more. And, you know, so for me, my big symptoms were by the time I got into this doctor, my body was shaking almost uncontrollably. I had lost the ability to write and type. Anything I did, I had to dictate. And as an educator, that was really hard. I would lose my balance a lot. I would lose my train of thought. My voice would fail. I would have a hard time moving. And it was just, somebody described it when someone had seen me the fall before my diagnosis and was very concerned. And about 3 months after my diagnosis, they saw me again after I'd been on medicine. And they said, "You look like you're feeling better, are you?" And I said, "Yeah, I really am." And they said, "You look like you were dying the last time I saw you." And that's the best way I can describe it. It's exactly how it felt. I just felt like I was slowly wasting away. And so this doctor gave me this medicine, and sure enough, it helped. And he didn't want to be the one to deliver the bad news to me, so sent me to a specialist. And that specialist did about a two-hour exam, and he came back and said, "You have Parkinson's disease." And even though we kind of knew that going into it, we kind of expected it, it was just, there's no words to describe how it rocked our world. As a family.
And at this point, you have how many children? I mean, you have a whole family, right? It's not just you and your wife.
I got two teenage children who had already watched their dad struggle with a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
And had their own struggle in dealing with this. I've got a wife who's young and is now having to deal with this possibly for the rest of her life. And we had,
it's a progressive disease.
It's a progressive disease that, basically how I am today is probably the best I'll be. And it just, there's the medicine. All it does is cover up the symptoms. The only thing that helps is exercise.
Which is great when you feel like you can't get out of bed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're so exhausted.
Yeah, and so it does, and it's not, there's not some miracle cure. There's a lot of promising treatments that even we're looking at, you know, going through. But this was going to be the rest of our life. And, you know, it definitely could be very debilitating in the end stages. And so this is what my wife and my children are looking at down the road.
And there's a few things I want to talk about, and I love your vulnerability. One, we do not have enough men representing this community. So I appreciate you standing up and being vulnerable and saying, like, "Hey, like, I'm sick, I matter," like, you know, and to me, like, it empowers other men to do the same thing or other, you know, people. Like I said, I mean, I think we've had, like, you're the second or third male to be on a podcast of 67 episodes. And that's not by my choice. It's, you know, based on, you know, who has, like, wanted to share their story. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, though, you get this diagnosis and now you have to tell your beautiful children. So your wife is already dealing with it, right? But how do you do it? Like, how did that go?
You know, it was, thankfully, when we got the diagnosis, their grandparents had actually taken them on a cruise. So they were enjoying themselves. They were having fun. But it was probably one of the hardest conversations I've had to have, to look at my kids and tell them this is daddy's future, to look at my wife and feel like she had been given a life sentence that she didn't sign up for. And knowing that she would sign up for it all over again and that she would do it all over again. It was just heartbreaking.
Can we just repeat? Like, I just want to just hone in on this because you said something that I don't think is talked about enough. We talk about caregivers. We're thankful for caregivers. But ultimately, I literally have chills from you saying she was given a life sentence she didn't sign up for that she would sign up for every time. Because, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have a spouse like that as well. And I don't know how she does it every day, you know? And that just like gave, that part isn't talked about, that like, you know, we weren't given a choice and they were, and they chose it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and so.
Yeah. And that is, that I think is the hardest part of having a chronic illness, is not the struggle it gives me, but the struggle it gives my family and my children and my wife, and how different their life is. And there are times, I mean, I'll be honest with you, there are times where I think, man, their life would be so much easier if they didn't have to deal with what I'm, me and what I'm dealing with. And that's hard. And, it, and it's hard to feel like they've been, I remember walking out of the doctor's office and I could hardly say a word. And I just said, babe, that life sucks bucket is getting pretty full. And that's how it felt at this point. I just felt like I'm done. Enough's enough. I've done my bit. I've walked through chronic illness for 20 years now. And I'm just tired. And I'm just done.
And it's, you know, I remember writing in my journal one time that, like, I'm tired, I'm done. But, like, I'm here because of, like, it would, how unfair it would be to my mom, to my wife, you know, and that's hard too, right? To be a burden and feel like you can't, it's just, it's like, this is not what I ordered. Can I send back the cheeseburger, please? Yeah. And so, man.
Yeah. You know, there's no way to describe it except like a sucker punch to the gut, even though we prepared ourselves. You know, part
I was
of
just
was,
gonna say, ever notice that? That like you can be like walking down the rare path that like you were given, chilling, and like you're watching out for buses, you're watching out for cars, you're walking, you're all the 10%, right? And then a plane just comes and it like down right there. Like out of nowhere, like you know, out of nowhere.
And just realizing that, you know, unfortunately, some of it was fear. You know, we had read, you know, I do think WebMD sometimes is of the devil. I really do, because it gives you way more information than you probably
need. I think the internet is the devil, if you ask me.
It is, it is. And, you know, we knew all the stories. We knew the struggle. We knew what could possibly be coming. And so you're hearing this news with all that in the background and all that going on in your head of all the possible outcomes. And then thinking, my God, how are we going to make it? How are we going to get through this as a family? And that's what made that news even harder.
And how do we do this? I know a lot of times I think without damaging, if I don't know if that's a good word, but like still allowing, not holding back the ones we love, because we all, I mean, I don't know, but I can assume about you because I've spent some time talking to you, but, you know, honestly, I don't want to hold, like, I can't do, but I don't want to hold my wife or my family back, like, and I know that that's their choice, but it doesn't feel good for me either, you know?
Yeah, and then on top of that, feeling like there are times where this crazy person comes out in your reactions because you're frustrated, you're struggling. I mean, I remember a conversation, something happened, the toilet was overflowing. And my kids were standing there and I'm yelling and because the water's going everywhere and I'm frustrated. And I get done and I apologize. And my daughter says, it's okay, Dad, it's just the Parkinson's. And just realizing, you know, I laughed. I said, please don't give me a pass. I was just being a jerk, sweetie, But realizing that that's in her mind, that she realizes sometimes Dad reacts differently because of everything he's walking through.
Absolutely. I mean, even I like in my speech, sometimes I think I'm talking and I'm not, right? And here's the thing is that I know that my wife doesn't mean to jump on me and say, like, what? And then, of course, I have, like, I like just explode from there because, like, I don't know I'm doing it. I'm trying my best and all the things. But, yeah, it becomes such a part of their everyday being. I will say, of course, you know, I love that, you know, your kids are able I always say I feel extremely guilty sometimes that I went 27 years without knowing the chronic illness community and their struggle existed. There's a lot of shame in that. And like, why didn't I see what was all around me? You know, when I started posting on Instagram, 5 members of my family told me about their chronic. And people I went on vacation with, you know, like, how did I not know?
It's easy. You know, we, since we've had this diagnosis, we've met a lot of people. We've been able to talk to and help and minister a lot of people. But my wife looked at me one day and said, "Do you really think you had to get Parkinson's to do this?" And I said, "Yes, babe, I think I did. Because I don't think I would have seen it. Even with all the other chronic illness I've had, this was one that just really upended everything." And it radically changed the way I looked and saw things. Even my daughter told me, she said, "Dad, you are so different than you were 3 years ago." It's amazing the things it makes unimportant and the things that it does make important.
And, you know, I think one of those things for me is I always thought, like, I'm a kind person, like, you know, or whatever have you. But to be, I feel that now so, I feel like I'm genuinely kind in terms of, like, positive intention that it took a million steps for you to get to this podcast today. And I'm not going to give you a hard time if you show up late. You know what I mean? Like, who am I to judge? I have no idea what it took you to get to where you are.
I have a lot less judgment than I used to.
Right? Like, I mean, here's one of mine. Like, I always laugh because, like, I grew up in the culture of, like, you don't miss work. So, like, to me, when I saw, like, people missing work, I couldn't, like, wrap my head around, like, a good reason to miss work. Because to me, if you had cancer, you didn't go to work, right? Like, that's like the world I lived in, like, this black and white. And then all the judgment that was passed on me when I wasn't at work, it put all, like, all of a sudden, right? Like, it shifts your perspective a ton. How has it been?
I remember having somebody look at me when I missed an event and it had just been a really bad day. And they looked at me and said, "You had responsibilities. You should have made sure either you were there or somebody else was taking your place." And again, I just looked at him and I didn't have a whole lot to say because I thought, you have no idea.
Right.
The battle I'm walking through. And that's where that's coming from. And you know, helps me give people a lot of grace in those moments. And I pray that they never do understand.
Right.
I mean, that they never have to deal with this.
Because most of the time when people are saying those things and they know, they're not going to know unless they know, and we can't, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think that's right. That's like internet trolls. Like, for me, I can't engage with them. Like, I can't. I cannot. Like, for me, they're not worth my energy. And, you know, I believe some people say genuine questions, maybe not in the best way, but I think you can tell that, right? And, like, I just refuse to give anybody, you know, my limited amount of spoons.
Yes, exactly.
I wanted to, before we, you know, talk about your book, which I'm super excited to get into, can you tell me a little bit about, like, what it's like to be a male in this space and, like, how you feel it's represented and your responsibilities, etc.?
You know, I feel like it's, you know, it's already hard for guys in our society to talk about what they're feeling, to talk about what they're dealing with, to show any weakness. We have this sick idea in society that men are supposed to be tough and strong, mm-hmm. and they can't cry and they can't show emotion. They can't have a bad day.
Or wear pink.
And I wear pink. I got a couple pink shirts. In fact, yesterday I spilled something on my shirt, so my daughter brought a pink Hawaiian shirt for me to wear to work the rest of the day at work. So,
oh my gosh, I love that.
But we have this idea that we got to be tough. That we can't show anything. And that robs us so much of the support that we need, of just being able to talk to someone and have somebody sit and listen and go, "You get it." You know, or me even be able to look at somebody that's in my shoes and say, "It's a rough day." And another guy know exactly what I'm feeling. And you know, it does, aside from that, it messes with a lot mentally. And your self-confidence, you know, I've had to, you know, deal with the emotion of, I'm very thankful that my children and that they have people in their life. But there's a lot of things I've had to miss as a dad because I couldn't do them physically. Yeah, I remember, I guess it's about 6 or 7 months after my diagnosis, I was having a really rough time. We just visited an elder care lawyer. I'd had to sign away everything to my wife and kids, so nothing's in my name anymore to protect it. So basically, it felt like I'd just given up everything, even though I was glad to do it, and I knew they were taken care of. But I remember looking at my wife, and I was just frustrated. And I said, babe, am I enough? Am I enough anymore for you? And if you know my wife, I love her to death. And she is just one of those very blunt people. And she looked at me and said, well, that's a stupid question. And it was her way of reminding me that, yes, Chad, you're enough. And yes, I would choose it all over again. But as a husband, I looked at the burden she was bearing or the extra things I couldn't do. And it's that guilt. You know, I was watching Dr. Phil, I guess about a year ago. I love Dr. Phil.
I just like love your honesty like so much. Like,
well, I was watching Dr. Phil and he was talking with somebody and he looked at them and said, you need to forgive yourself. And I remember sitting there with tears in my eyes because I could not forgive myself for having a chronic illness. And somebody would think that's so stupid. Why would you need to forgive yourself? But the guilt and the shame and the frustration and just realizing I had to forgive myself and realizing it's not a one-time thing. Sometimes it's daily.
It's not linear. And none of this is linear, right?
Yeah. Like that's and so just, you know, some of those things as a guy, we can't talk about. And it's hard. You know, even in my writing and things like that, I've tried to be very open with the days where I was just done, with the days I sat on the side of the bed in tears, just telling my wife, I can't go on. I can't do this another day. And her hugging me and saying, yes, you can. Or sometimes kicking me in the pants and saying, get up. Yes, you can. You know, because some days I need both of those things.
Absolutely. And, you know, the beauty about that inner circle of caregivers, right, is they always seem to know when we need each better than when we know we need each. I mean, I don't know about you, but my wife knows before I do that, like, I'm done. Right. And so she tries to get me to slow down. She tries. And I just fight her the entire time until my body shuts down. And then I'm like, I'm going to listen to her next time. And next time comes around and here I am doing the same thing. But
yeah. Oh yeah. She knows I'm having a bad day before I ever say it. I don't like to admit it, and I'll say it, but she can tell from the moment I say good morning what kind of day I'm having.
We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Have you struggled to keep your medical records today? Do you carry huge binders from doctor to doctor only to find out you don't have what they need? Trust me, I get it. And for a long time, I pushed off the dreaded task of organizing my medical records. But procrastinate no more, people. ConsoliDoc is a real game changer. ConsoliDoc helps me collect and manage all of my medical information using one portal. Awesome, right? Well, it gets better. Once you have an account, you can submit as many record requests as you would like. And it gets better. Each one of these requests takes less than 30 seconds and poof, you're done. That's right, you heard me. You are done. The ConsoliDoc team takes care of the rest. And the best part? Monthly subscriptions start at $10.99 for adults. I know, is this real life? Having access on the go to all my medical records has allowed me to concentrate less on the paperwork and more on my wellness journey. So don't waste another moment. Head over, start taking control of your records your way at ConsoliDoc.com.
Okay, Chad. So here's the thing. You may have, like, this rocked your world, but you rose, right? Like, and you wrote a book. And I'm going to let you tell the title because I loved it so much. I don't want to ruin it. But can you tell us how you got to that point and what it was like writing?
You know, two people really, really encouraged me and inspired me to do this. One was my wife. I had done some writing years before, never really went anywhere. And I just had kind of let it slide with everything else I had to do. And she said, Chad, you really need to write down what you're feeling, what your journey is. And so I wrote the first couple of chapters. I actually started as a blog. And I showed it to her, and she said, this is really good. You need to keep doing it. And later that year, I was having lunch with a pastor friend. And he said, how are you going to let your suffering be used? And at first I thought, well, that's stupid. I don't want to let it be used for anything. That was how it started. It started as a blog with me writing. And then slowly but surely, you know, I had somebody say, hey, you ought to put these together in a collection and put it out in a book or something, you know, for somebody. And I realized that, you know, all of us are fighting a battle. Every single one of us are. And while as different as our battles are, there are some things that are very similar.
Yeah.
And so the title of my book was Mine's Parkinson's, What's Yours? This idea of my battle is Parkinson's, what's your battle? And maybe some of the things I share in this book can help you process the emotions of what you're going through. And so, you know, I put titles in there. You know, some of them were things like, you know, I'm so tired of the fight, or when is enough enough, or being okay with not being okay. You know, just some of these ideas of, you know, I talked about, you know, the focus that I had, or days when all hope seems lost, or, you know, like I said, a life sentence, you know, where that's what it felt like. You know, it felt like, you know, this is going to dog me the rest of my life. You know, one of my favorite chapters I wrote actually when the Mr. Rogers movie came out. I'm a huge Mr. Rogers fan, and this song, It's You I Like. And even as an adult, I was reminded that I'm liked, that I'm loved, that I'm cared for. And that's important, even as an adult, to be reminded of those things. But, you know, I had, you know, some things. I had a chapter where I said, God, your plan stinks. Because that was a date that I was having. It just, you know, God, this really sucks. This is a crappy plan. Yeah. And, or even I'm afraid, or I'm alone, or, you know, sometimes tears are needed. Sometimes we need to cry. Sometimes you need to get it out, and all of those things are okay.
I don't know how much you know about me, because I don't really, like, we haven't crossed paths yet, but I don't know who your daughter is, but Taylor Swift is my, like, I have like a few things that I don't mess around with. My listeners know, ready? Taylor Swift, Meredith Grey, and Ticonderoga pencils. They're just non-negotiables in my life. Like, and the fact that you just have a theme song with Taylor Swift just makes me love you even more.
But, you know, we learned that. And, you know, I've learned to tell Parkinson's jokes.
You have an evil sense of humor. Parkinson's, like, that wit sense of humor. And people are looking at you like, am I supposed to laugh or whatever? I'm like, well, it's better than you just staring at me.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I have a friend who every time he sees me, he'll say, hey, what's shaking? And I'll say, me.
That's a really good one.
I've learned to laugh when I can and cry when I need to.
I like that.
And both those places are okay. And I don't have to, you know, there's days where I go to my wife and I say, I'm tired of being the happy warrior today. I'm tired of being the encourager today. And there's other days.
More advocacy is exhausting. And, yeah. Taking care of your health is exhausting.
Yeah, I remember I guess about a year after my diagnosis, I met a family that was days after receiving the same diagnosis I had. And I was talking with them. I gave them a copy of my book. I shared with them a little bit. But I walked out there and just cried because it brought me back to that day of getting the news myself. And for me, it was like just ripping the Band-Aid off all over again. And so, yeah, some days it's harder than others to do this.
Not going to lie, Chad. As soon as you said Taylor Swift, I went ahead and I was on Amazon and I'm grabbing your book, mostly because I love the style and I love you. But, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, we get some T Swift connections in there. Is there anything else in store for you? Like, what's next?
You know, I've really, I started doing a lot of just writing. I've gotten a few opportunities with some organizations like the Mighty and We Go Health to do a lot of different things.
Can we just talk about We Go Health for a second? I
Love yes. WeGo Health, but it's also something that is like not known. Like, why couldn't I find WeGo Health at the beginning of my journey? I only found it last year yeah. when I was nominated for something, yeah. right? And I mean, now they're actually, you know, the pre-roll of this podcast, and they're amazing, and they're so and like I said, I just enjoy getting my coins every day.
Yes, yeah. And so, you know, I'm continuing to write. I've actually got a couple more book projects in the works. I'm continuing to write a blog. I'm actually started doing some patient advocacy, and we're trying to start both some online and in-person support groups for young families with Parkinson's and chronic illness. We're also exploring the possibility of beginning a nonprofit that will minister specifically to families. Because I think we forget. I tell people all the time, I said, I'm the poster child for our family right now, and people always ask how I'm doing. But they forget that I've got other people in this house that are fighting the same battle I am. And it's not that I have Parkinson's. It's that we as a family have it, because it affects everything. And just realizing that those in the shadows need just as much support. And I tell you, I don't know where I would be if it were not for my wife and my children. I don't know. I don't think I could be doing what I'm doing now if it weren't for them.
I'm not going to lie. We're going to take a moment here to shout out Chad's wife and two children. I'm going to let you say their names because I don't know their names. But if you're listening out there.
Well, my wife, Kimberly, in December, we'll be married 24 years. And she's an amazing lady who stayed by my side every day. And then I've got an almost 20-year-old daughter named Alyssa. And a almost 18-year-old son named RJ, and they're just the support they give and the help they give are amazing. We actually also have an adopted son living with us right now. One of my former students, his name's Greg.
Oh my God, Chad! Why do you always leave these things out? You just know how to get to my heart. Oh, I swear, guys, he did not feel so out right.
but you know, and you know, just you know, it's their support and their love and their care. And you know, even a year ago, my daughter and I had an opportunity to share with her high school what it's like as a, and because they were talking about walking through trials and walking through difficulties, and so she got to share what it was like having a dad who's chronically ill and what has been the journey it's been for her. And and, you know, thankfully, my children have had people around them that have helped them process this and supported them, because it's not easy. It's not easy for any of them. And so, you know, I look at families and I see such a need to just be an encouragement to them and to let them know that they're not alone.
I couldn't agree more with you. So, I remember after... you know, my stepfather passed away, my mom took us to this Camp Moriah, right? In which it was all geared around like our age group of kids, right? With, you know, families who have lost a parent. And there's nothing like that for our caregivers. You know what I mean? Like, they're just forgotten. They're forgotten in FMLA. They're forgotten in accommodations. Like, and so, you know, I think it's amazing, you know, not only a nonprofit, but to start the advocacy work that is so needed about, you know, it's not just patient advocacy. It's like you said, it's a we advocacy, I guess. I don't know.
Well, and what I want to do is I want to educate people on the battle and struggle people are having. I also want to help them know how to help others. You know, I wrote an article years ago, 15 ways to support families that are battling, or friends or your friend that are battling chronic illness. And again, just a little primer of things for people to say, this is what you can do to help us feel part. This is what you can help us do to make us feel normal. And this is what you can do for our families. This is how you can help these families, because there's nothing normal about our life. And they need people that understand that and understand what it's like, and that they can vent to, that they can share with when they're having those days.
Yeah, somewhere they can share that, like, it's not okay. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my wife doesn't like to even tell me when her stomach hurts, because she's just like, you get up every day and you fight this. Who am I to say that? And I'm like, that's not, I want to know, you know, but like, that's how they feel. They, yes. Like, they genuinely see the struggle every day and feel like,
my wife and I, yes. My wife and I had the exact same conversation. She last week had broken her ankle, but she's also been having some problems from a previous injury. And one day she was telling me this. She said, look who I'm complaining to. And I said, babe, I want you to share this with me. I want you to feel like you can share this. But at the same time, I also want her to have avenues where she can talk with people when I'm being frustrating, because as charming, as wonderful as I am, I can be a real jerk sometimes when I'm not feeling good.
And say shitty things about me. Excuse my French, right? Like,
she can go talk to people and say, oh, yeah, he's driving me nuts. I'm gonna kill him right now.
It's right?
Just, and you know, she needs to be able to have that avenue to share that.
Or also to say, you know, one struggle we had was, I used to cook a lot, right? And so, my wife would say, I really miss when you cooked us dinner or whatever every night. And like, she is saying it as a way to connect with me. And I'm now shut down because I just feel overwhelmed with guilt. And so
you can't do what you did before.
Yes. Right. Because like, I took that away regardless of whatever. And so she's trying to connect with me and I'm now flooded with guilt and shutting down and we're missing each other, you know? And that's another, you know, a whole nother episode about how, you know, you work through that communication.
That's a real struggle for couples, because there's not a part of your life that's not affected by it. And it can make just the simplest connections harder because you're constantly battling, you know, not just being, you know, in a relationship, but then letting it become something where you're just roommates or it's a caregiver patient kind of thing. And it's a whole different dynamic that you constantly have to fight against.
Exactly. I was going to say, I mean, I don't know about you, but how many times have I told my wife, like, I want you to be my wife. So if I'm having a good day and I'm running around and doing stupid things, like, I need you to try to let go of the worry, let go of and be in the moment with me, because, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing worse than like, where's your water? Where's this? And I'm like, I get it. And I know why they worry. It's not about that. It's just, yeah. right. It's hard. It's just, none of this is hard.
Yeah.
And no one gives you a handbook that's like, hey, welcome to chronic illness life. You know, you're in for this.
Yeah. There's a lot of times where we've had that conversation is I want to be husband and wife, not patient and nurse. I don't want to lose this. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Jed, it has been a true pleasure. Where can people go to find you, to connect with you, to learn more about you and your family, your story?
I have a website. It's called mindsparkinsons.com. That has links to most of the writing I've done. I also have a blog that is linked on that website. Pretty much anything I write or do, even with support activities, that's kind of a central point for everything. And, you know, I do a lot of, you know, not only group stuff, but I talk one-on-one with a lot of people online. From around the world that are battling Parkinson's or things, because it is so rare. And just, you have nothing else to start building those connections. I think is really important. And for people to know they're not alone. And that no matter what you're walking through, there is reason to hope. There is reason to keep going. And that's the most important thing.
Ooh, I love that. Everyone knows I get the ooh-ha-ha sensations. You know, I get all mushy. As always, friends, I went ahead and linked all of that in the show notes, including the link to the book. Grab your copy. I know I can't wait for mine to come. Jed, thank you so much for being here with me today, for being flexible about the time, and so willing to open up.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, my prayer is that this helps somebody with the battle they're walking through. And if I can do that for even one person, then that makes it worth it.
Your story is somebody else's survival guide.
Exactly.
And as always, thank you to our listeners who tune in every week while we bridge the gap between rare disease and the rest of the world. Until next time, live large and stay rare.
Catch us next week for another episode. To continue the conversation about rare disease and all the unknowns that comes with it, join our Facebook group. Want even more rare? Become a VRP member on Patreon and learn more about our stories or how to share yours by visiting bwspod.com.